Eric, great for covering addict, just in case the recording started after I began. So, I'm really good at forgetting things, and I'd forgotten this was going to be recorded. So now I think I'm not going to share about what I was going to share about. No, just because in some ways this is going to be the face of NA for worked in a secular way. And so I think I'll change a little bit, but I'll go back in time a little bit. Over 30 years ago, my family did an intervention on me, and I was 35 years old, unemployed and unemployable, living in my mother's basement. And everyone wondered what had happened to this wonderful graduate of an Ivy League university. And I had become an addict, I think a little later than most, but not all, and when I share my story, I'm mindful of the fact that it might seem a little different, and I don't mean to portray it as different. That said, I remember during my first week of going to meetings, there was a person taking a one-year cake that had graduated from the same Ivy League university in the same year as I had. So, this disease does not respect any socioeconomic or group. I began using in college, and it's amazing how quickly I became a fall down drunk. And I basically had started off as a pre-med student, and basically partying had made it impossible to keep my grades up. And so I fished around for something I could do, something that I felt I could do the night before. And so I switched to studying Greek and Latin literature. And I switched. I switched drugs. I stopped drinking. I understood that I couldn't drink. At least I was not insane enough at that point to keep it up. But I didn't understand, of course, that it's a disease. And so I switched to pot. I liked it. I began using it during vacations, and then I began. Then of course it became. The weekends or something, or weekends. And then, I have to say, by the end of my tenure in college, I had to smoke pot before exams because it was my belief that you remembered things better under the influence of the same drug that you studied under. And that could just be a rationalization. That's the thing. I just wanted to get high, so I'm gonna get high during tests. Well, why not? Who knows? So I graduated, and because of my uneven academic performance, I really had no job prospects. Couldn't even. I mean, I couldn't really get any recommendations to go to graduate school or anything. That was my whole trajectory that I had planned. Just had derailed. But the nice thing is I lived in this sort of blissful state of not caring. I just basically bummed around the college town and got minimum wage jobs and took a few courses on the side and thought I was living life. So finally one fine morning in the middle of February, I decided that the New England weather was just way, way too cold. Within a week, I was on a plane back to Miami, where my family was. What I just did there was actually give you a reason, which is not true at all. If we'll be getting to the steps, one of the things you can do is work through that step working guide, and it's a bear. It's got like 60 questions for the first step, and a lot of them are repetitive. And one of the ones that I notice always stumps people is, have you ever given plausible but untrue reasons for your behavior? Explain, and this is a hard one for a lot of people, I think, especially in early recovery, because we believe all the shit that our heads tell us. Even the reason I gave you was not the same one I had at the time. I would have told you that it was some bad romantic relationships I was having, had some breakups with people that I was working with, shouldn't have had a relationship to begin with, and I was just going to go start over again somewhere else. But the truth is that my best friend had become a cocaine dealer in Miami, and that was where I was going. my ability to kid myself, even sometimes in retrospect, it always amazes me. And that's actually the theme. If there's going to be a theme to what I say, and it bears on the use of religion in the 12-step programs, which is that I'm a big fan of reason, but I don't always use it. My mind is very fallible, and I will I'm not always aware of the motivations that I have, and I'm also keenly aware of the fact that I need checking on. I need to be some system of accountability, so that my autopilot doesn't take me all kinds of places. And you might call that a higher power. It's actually a number of different resources that I use that have some sort of hook that gets into my unconscious mental processes and also motivates me. The other thing too is the one of the central problems for me in recovery has been motivation, and it was also during my life, so I went to Miami, and I had a job I think lined up, at least I thought I did. It was one of those things where someone said, "Well, you should apply maybe," and I was just going to party for a couple of weeks, and 8 months later, I looked at, didn't I say it was going to be 2 weeks, 8 months? Oh, well, I'm having a good time. I'll keep on going. And then another couple of years went by. Eventually, I realized I had to stop, and I didn't know how. And I kept on relapsing. I had no notion of the disease. I just thought I could do it on willpower. I thought it was pretty evident to me that this was messing up my life. And yet I would still keep on going. During that time, a woman that I used to call the love of my life, we had gotten back together occasionally, she was also an alcoholic and an addict, she had found AA, and she gave me this big book of hers, and I took a look at it, and it looked interesting. I have to say that it looked interesting. I could already make the transposition between alcoholism and cocaine use, and whatnot. And then it got to that chapter for the agnostic, I read it again recently, and it's a lot less self-satisfied and hectoring than I thought it was at the time. But it really just rubbed me the wrong way. I realized that in essence, it was saying it wasn't for me, because it's strange. I wouldn't call myself an atheist, and I still don't on some level, just because it's like saying I don't believe in Santa Claus, or and I don't mean to well, that's probably the wrong way. It's like I don't believe in Zeus. I don't believe in Zeus. And Greek mythology is very pretty, but I don't believe the stories in it. I understand the way they have influenced the culture, and they can have some value, literary value and everything, but it wouldn't occur to me. And when I didn't grow up in this country, so when I came back when my father died, when I was 13, and I met people who were Christians, and I was astonished. It was like, people who believed in Zeus, like what? I mean, I had always thought, and I lived in countries where, basically there was I lived in Islamic countries and Catholic countries and Eastern Orthodox countries and secular countries, it always just seemed to be part of the culture more than anything else. And I could see people following certain days. You know, we celebrate the 4th of July. Is that a religious festival? I don't think so. You know, and that sort of thing. And I could, but it never occurred to me that this is what they were doing. And in fact, you know, when my father died, I realized I needed some help. You know, I read some books on grieving, and I read some Roman philosophers on death and consolation, because, you know, what else are you going to do? I mean, it wouldn't have occurred to me to consult, you know, any ancient scriptures for anything that was of relevance to me in the present day. So that's sort of my worldview, you know. I want to add too that I took a course in college on the psychology of religion, and this is back when I would just take, you know, interesting courses, and this is part of my just like let me try something new type of thing. And I didn't know what the psychology of religion was going to be. I thought it was going to explain the weakness that led people to believe in religion, but actually it was a very interesting course on how basically religious practices, fasting, self-mortification, drugs even, basically induced altered states and allowed people to reintegrate their conscious minds. And basically these were all ways of influencing that borderline that we have in the dream world and the unconscious mind, that is outside our ability to consciously control. And so I could see that. And you know, I have to say, always throughout NA until the secular came along, I just see it as one of those tools. You know, religion is just a tool to influence our unconscious. You can call it self-hypnosis if you want to. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily in the early stages of recovery. You know, these are things that these are just tools to counteract some really, really long-standing habits. So anyway, back to where I am. So I decided I'm going to leave Miami. And boom, I moved from the cocaine capital of the United States to what turned out to San Diego, which turned out to be the meth capital of the United States. At least that's what they billed themselves as. I've noticed that over time, I've realized that a lot of places advertise themselves as the such and such capital of the United States. I think wherever an addict goes, that's the capital of that drug, you know, when all is said and done. But you know, and the same pattern, you know, reasserted itself. You know, losing career prospects, losing friends, eventually, you know, even almost losing my family. And so they did an intervention on me. It was very simple. It was very simple. They just asked me to define addiction and what an addict was, and you know, they knew me. You know, they're my family after all. I had a cousin who was a doctor, gone to visit him, and he saw me walking off the plane, and he was already discussing with his wife, who was a drug treatment counselor, how they were going to get me into treatment. You could call that luck, actually. I thought about it for a while, and I just couldn't come up with anything that wasn't me. Pretty that simple. You know, I didn't have to define addiction or anything. It was like, oh fuck, I'm an addict. And they made it really simple. They said, you know, just, you know, I thought they were going to send me to Betty Ford or something like that, but no such luck. They sent me to a 10-day spin dry in Oceanside, California, and which just introduced me to meetings and they said, you know, work this program. And I had some pretty high hopes for the 12 steps, because I'd done a little therapy. I'd done some inner child work. I was always sort of pretending, get this, I was pretending to be crazy to my family, so I would disguise my drug use. But anyway, the sad thing was, actually, I was reading about schizophrenia. I thought, well, yeah, let me pretend to be schizophrenic. And I realized, my God, I think I am. And it turns out there is such a thing as amphetamine-induced schizophrenia or psychosis. And I've managed to get that too. Anyway, it wore off with time. That's the beauty of this program. So I got a sponsor who said he was an atheist. And I breezed through several years of recovery, finding a career, and getting married to a wonderful woman that I'm still married to, relapsing because that's part of my story, but getting clean again. And one of the wonderful things about this program, the program has taught me, is that you can get together with back loved ones if you haven't really screwed things up too much. You can mend relationships. That's the amends process. So, which brings me now, I have I'm celebrating 9 years clean. So it's a long journey from 31 years ago. But I have to say I'm in a really, really good place now. When I celebrated 1 year clean, I remember I expected everyone to say what a wonderful person I was. That's what it, people what's done during anniversaries here in the United States. They even have a cake sometimes and blow out a candle, and everyone who gave me a cake and who talked about me when I celebrated 1 year clean said, "This is Eric. He's really crazy." That's all they said, because I was really crazy. It takes a little while for the insanity to wear off. It also takes a while to apparently, according to my wife, it takes a couple of years to wear for my being an asshole to wear off too, But she unfortunately I've exposed her to this process twice. So, anyway, let's talk a little bit about the steps. How do you work the steps without God? I did it, and I have to say as a postscript, oh my goodness, I only have 5 minutes. As a postscript, that everyone works the steps without God. If you don't believe God exists, then what's happening? People find sources of motivation. People find sources of strength. People find sources of realism and sanity and a path towards sanity. And that's what they got. The first step is should be a real bummer, I think. Some people define the words. I don't know what how that works for a lot of people. For me, I just try to find the meaning that NA had and look at different dictionary definitions, and I came up with suffering, the truth to enter my conscious awareness, because I think there's a bit of suffering. It's like, oh my God, if I understood how much I was hurting myself, if I understood how much I was ruining my life, I would stop doing it. I blissfully forget about it on a regular basis. This process, can restore me to sanity. Not permanent sanity. It's sort of intermittent. That's the best I can claim now. Sometimes I feel sane, sometimes not. But I can bounce back. I mended a lot of fences. The third step for me is about making decisions. It doesn't matter really what the decision is. I had never made a decision in my life. I just let things happen to me, and actually making a decision and sticking to it for me is the principal lesson of the third step. The inventory process is really important. Fourth and fifth step are a really detailed inventory, but I want to say that no matter where you are in your recovery, you can always work step 10 and you can always work step 11. I think these are the steps that people don't talk about that you can put out of order. I have to say, the first time I worked the steps, I really got nowhere with 6 and 7, and I think that's because of the way they're written. They're not written in a way that makes sense to someone who's not religious, and I had to find sources of things that I valued and a system of implementing those values that was rational. I got it out of Aristotle, actually, but it actually took me 4 times through the steps before I actually got some headway on what I think are my character defects. But the amends process went really, really well. I'll close with this because I know I'm almost out of time. When I made amends to my mother, I'd been paying her mortgage already for several years. So the fact that I had sponged off her and lived in her basement for ages, no longer, it was not much of an issue anymore. Plus, it was very easy because as much as I'd hurt her and my family, working the steps for a while had changed me. And by the time I got to my ninth step, I was a person who wasn't promising to do things better. I was a person who actually was doing it better. It was a very nice process. And the reason I'm going to close with this is because this is the power of the steps. My mother passed away about 15 years ago, and she had been on terrible relationships with my brother-in-law, and she was, I didn't know it, she was close to death, but she was actually only 2 days away from death, and she started asking me about the steps. And she didn't know the numbers. And I was wondering which one she wanted to know about. She wanted to know about the amends step. She wanted to know about the eighth and ninth step. And she wanted to make amends to my brother-in-law. And she did. The next day, my brother-in-law came down from LA and they mended fences. They'd had a terrible relationship for a decade. And my brother-in-law was almost a little pissed. He says, "I've got closure with your mother, but I don't have closure with my own parents." This program can give so much. It can influence you, can give you a better life, it can make other people's lives. The consequences of my having worked a ninth step are radiating out and influencing many people now. So work the steps. There's a thing we say at the end of a meeting, which is keep coming back. It works if you work it. So work it. You're worth it. That's all I got. Thanks.